This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this afternoon at TSN1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday afternoon as we get you set for the Winnipeg Jets and the Dallas Stars, 6 p.m. tonight at MTS Center, a game you can hear live on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside Richard Pollock. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. Without further ado, I say good afternoon to my colleague, Richard. Richie, how you doing? You're looking well on this Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, doing well, Drew. I mean, it's freezing outside. It seems like every time we do a show from Boston Pizza, it's minus 48 out there, but that's hockey weather,
yes,
I think, and Dallas is in town tonight, and the game seems to have more meaning than it would have had, say, I don't know, 4 days ago.
Yeah, well, the Jets have certainly come back from the All-Star break with a little bit of struggles.
Yeah.
Especially their trip through Pennsylvania this week, the two losses to Pittsburgh on Tuesday night by a 5-3 margin, their loss to Philadelphia on Thursday night by a 5-2 margin. So let's start with that first question, Richard. On a scale of folk fest chill to zombie apocalypse, where would you put your concern level over the Jets' play over the last few games?
It's probably on if it's on a scale of 10, both yeah. You know, that's the... That's
you don't like my folk fest chill versus zombie apocalypse scale?
Well, I mean, it's... Yeah, you know, I enjoy that, Drew, but if folk fest chill is 0 in terms of concern,
yeah,
and zombie apocalypse is, say, 10,
yeah,
I would put my concern at a 3.5 to 4.
3.5 to 4. Okay, yeah. So you're still on the, let's say, confident side of things.
Yeah, I'm not. You know, it's just two games, right? And it's two games after the All-Star break. It maybe takes them a little while to get going. And, you know, I know some people were concerned, and so far it's been proven out that, and it's only two games, granted, that you lose a little momentum, you lose that mojo during that All-Star break, and you're kind of picking up and starting again. And I think part of that has to do with having a full roster now and having to apportion ice time in a way you didn't have to before.
Sure.
And we'll get into that throughout the show. But I'm not that concerned just yet. If they were to lose, say, two of the next three here, then I would really become concerned as to what's going on, and especially because their schedule, especially in March, in my opinion, is very difficult.
Sure.
So you want to make sure you're staying in, and teams have already been gaining ground, and you lose two clean games in the National Hockey League. It's amazing how many teams are gaining points left, right, and center, especially with these three-point games. That seems like every time Nashville plays a game, and they're kind of far away from the Jets now, but every game's a three-point game. So in St. Louis. So it's going to be difficult to catch those teams. But I'm concerned, but I'm not overly concerned.
Jets currently still hold down that first wild card spot, which they lead over the Calgary Flames by 5 points. But you're right when you say that, you know, the Dallas Stars, tonight's opponent, and the Colorado Avalanche are slowly getting a little bit closer in the rearview mirror than they were if the Jets had gone into Pennsylvania and had, you know, quote-unquote, taken care of business.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, last week when we looked at the Jets' remaining schedule for the second half of the season, the post-All-Star break of the season, you know, they had the, I guess it was 34 games to go at that point in time, now down to 32. And you would have said that, you know, the Pittsburgh game, you're not okay losing, but you know, you understand losing it if Crosby and Malkin are in the lineup.
Right, that's right.
There's no Crosby and Malkin.
We got a call in the postgame show, Drew. I think something you said was something I had to answer for, which is always good.
Oh, okay.
But the truth is, at least they're listening. Exactly. We both agreed, though, that it was a game that they ought to have had considering the lack of those two players. Never mind no Ole Matta, never mind no Marc-Andre Fleury.
Right.
I think we agreed on that.
That's right.
And that was a blown opportunity as far as I was concerned.
I thought the Jets played better in the Pittsburgh game.
Yeah, I agree.
The first period notwithstanding, where they were a little bit sluggish and everything else, which is to sort of be accepted.
Yep.
You know, first game. I thought the Philadelphia game had a lot more warts on it for whatever reason.
The reason, Drew, is that in that Philadelphia game, 3-on-1s, 2-on-1s, breakaways were whenever Philadelphia wanted them, right? Really?
Yeah.
That's why I would be more concerned about it. Now, you could say maybe they played just as poorly in the Pittsburgh game, but the skill level wasn't there for Pittsburgh to take advantage of it. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that, but I could see that point.
Yeah, I thought the Pittsburgh game, I thought they controlled the second period in that Pittsburgh game.
They did.
I thought that was much more of an even game than the Philadelphia game. Even, you know, when the game was close in Philadelphia, I thought the struggles were significant, and if it wasn't for a number of nice saves by Michael Hutchinson in that Philly game where they had, like you said, odd man rushes, defensive breakdowns, things of that nature. The score, a 5-2 defeat was almost flattering to the Jets, given how poorly I thought they played on Thursday night.
I 100% agree. I thought Michael Hutchinson was excellent. I mean, the save on Matt Reed.
Yeah.
Giroux's save on partial breakaways on the 3-on-1, the 3-on-2, as a trailer. There was a couple chances Couturier had on 2-on-1. Could have been a lot worse.
That's
for
right.
Sure. I'm definitely concerned about the defensive play. I thought there, you always hear Paul Maurice, we were talking about it on Thursday on the post-game show. You always hear Paul Maurice talk about gaps. Well, their gaps were terrible. Mm-hmm. There's a massive amount of space for between defensemen and forwards, and the defensemen, I thought, were their spacing was pretty bad as well. And just kind of a lack of focus. I think you look at the penalties that Zach Bogosian and Tobias Enstrom took, skating, interference, holding penalties, whatever they were called, on dump and chase plays. Well, I mean, Tobias Enstrom and Zach Bogosian, just turn around and skate. I mean, you guys can get in the corner. Certainly, if you're not going to get to the puck first, you have enough speed to be able to take that angle. So why are you taking those penalties? That's lack of focus.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about the apparent new pairings coming up in the next segment here. But overall, I mean, we can talk all we want about a lot of the things that were issues, but I think the biggest issue at the end of the day, and certainly Pavlik's play on Tuesday was an issue, but the biggest issue for me was the top line.
Yeah.
In both games was completely invisible.
Mm-hmm.
And the third line was really effective. I thought the second line, Matthew Perreault especially, in that second game against Philadelphia, I mean, chances everywhere, really. I mean, he obviously had a couple of goals, but they had a bunch of chances late in the third period, and he was creating opportunities. Mark Scheifele had a chance, and Folik was getting a little involved. Again, the third line's been really consistent over those two games, was continuing to play well.
Playing a simple game, that third line.
Generating chances.
Yeah.
The first line, though, I mean, just hasn't been anywhere to be found. And Chris Letang matched up against them for essentially all but 2-3 shifts in on the Tuesday game. He gets 5 assists.
Yeah.
And so not only is he getting them out of their defensive zone in Pittsburgh, but he's creating offense against that line. And I know some of that's going to be on special teams and things like that. But at the end of the day, you can't get outscored by their defense with 5-9. I think they had none on that game. In any event, your best players on this team, when you are kind of a top-9 group that likes to get scoring from everywhere, you need, and the top line has been excellent this year, so I'm not criticizing them as a whole, but these past two games, you need them to pick up their game again, especially against a Dallas team that has Sagan and Ben.
Sure.
Ben seems to be coming on, 9 points his last 5 games? Dynamic player. I mean, Tyler Sagan's a dynamic player as well. So you got to match tonight. You got to make sure you're up at that level, because I don't think this team can go anywhere if those guys aren't going.
So then let's look at it from Jets coach Paul Maurice's perspective.
Yeah.
How does he get them? So he's seen two bad games,
yeah,
probably the two worst games defensively that he's seen probably since the beginning of the year, since they started 1-4.
The Philly game especially.
Yeah, the Pittsburgh game, there was a lot of, the goals in the Pittsburgh game, a lot of them were bad goals. I mean, Andre Pavlik was not sharp, like the entire team was not sharp.
Yeah.
So how does head coach Paul Maurice get the team to sort of recalibrate themselves and refocus themselves and get back to the style he's been preaching so successfully from the start of the season?
That's a question for the dressing room, to be honest, Drew. That's a motivation question. That's making sure that you continue. Now, I think, to be honest, if you want to look from a motivation perspective, you look at the standings.
Yeah.
It's not as comfortable as it was 3 to 4 days. Seriously, it isn't. So if it's not that much more comfortable, the players will be more motivated. So you want to point their attention. You mentioned Dallas. Dallas is 9 points back of the Jets. When I'm looking at teams that are going to take a spot from the Jets, I'm not looking at Dallas. But you're right. You win this game tonight. If you're Dallas, you're 7 points back. And you got 2 games in hand.
That's right.
So again, 2 games in hand, you still got to get points out of them. But if I'm Paul Maurice, I'm leaning on the fact that there are teams gaining on you, and you can't suddenly become a comfortable, complacent squad.
Sure.
You can't. And that's the biggest thing that I would be preaching. Now, of course, playing hard, that is... And I think one of the things, Drew, is you talk about gap. But let's talk about, in all honesty, it's joining the play a lot at the wrong times, being overly aggressive. Paul Maurice spoke about that. Jumping into the rush, not having a guy covering back, which they've done really well this year, is covering for their guys and skating. And they have a really mobile defense who can join the rush and get back with ease, unlike a lot of teams.
Well, we saw that one. I think it was Trouba who jumped up on the shorthanded play.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a shorthanded. They decided to jump up and have an odd man rush while shorthanded, and then Andrew Ladd missed the shot,
right,
and the puck rings around the boards, and Pittsburgh comes back with the odd man rush the other way.
That's right.
on a power play situation, and Jacob Trouba got back in the play like he was flying a jet plane.
Right, but you can't do that all the time,
no,
right?
Of course you can't do that all the time. I'm not preaching that that's
so
the style they should be playing.
You can't run around.
It was just an impressive display by Jacob Trouba.
Absolutely, and then you can't run around as much, and then it's, of course, you know, playing as that whole five-man unit. Again, the cliches, but the way they've been playing, they've supported each other so well on the ice. And by that I mean, if defenseman's pinching in the offensive zone, forwards rotating back, or defenseman reads that and doesn't pinch in. You know, it's, again, it's the back pressure through the neutral zone, which I didn't think was very good last game. That's back-checking. Simplify the terms. It's back-checking. So those are the little things. And, you know, you look at the score sheet all you want, the stat sheet, but it's the little things, and that's an effort level thing. That's a focus thing. And I bet you that's what Paul Maurice is harping on more than anything over the past 2 days.
Yeah, I think so. They came back from Pennsylvania. They didn't skate yesterday. They had a media availability, and I imagine they went through some tape. And said, you know, this is when we're succeeding, this is what we're doing. And you just described it. This is how we played on Tuesday and Thursday, and that's not the way we're going to succeed. That was sort of the quote-unquote Claude Noel era Jets that we saw Tuesday, Thursday, with sort of more fire wagon, more... just the lack of attention to detail that has almost become their calling card through the first half of the season, through the first 40-some-odd games, where they've been so good at the little things, they got away from that this past week in Pennsylvania.
And this team doesn't have the top-end skill level to be able to do that. I mean, you don't have Jeroen Voracek, you don't have Sagan Benn. You just don't. So you can't start trading chances with those guys who would love to trade chances with you.
Sure.
That's playing into their hands. You can't do that. Yeah, you have to. I mean, remember, the Jets, a lot of their success was in pretty low-scoring affairs.
Yeah, where they were tight-checking affairs.
Tight-checking and ensuring that you're not, you know, Michael Hutchinson played great, I thought, on Thursday. And, you know, you can take an issue with maybe a rebound or one of the Brayden Schenn goal, whatever it may be. Point is, he played really well, I thought. And a couple of his performances where he's got the win, you know, he hasn't been challenged as much. That's what you want.
Sure.
You want to be able to limit those opportunities instead of having him try and stand on his head. And so that's going to be... He's going tonight, right?
Yeah, we'll talk about the lineup, and we'll talk about the lineup changes after this segment. But it is important, you know, if you're going to lose games, if you're going to struggle, struggle against the East.
Yeah, fair enough.
Because it's, you know, you can, if you bounce back all of a sudden and you beat Dallas tonight,
absolutely,
a lot of your bad feelings from Tuesday and Thursday go away really quickly.
That's hockey, right?
That's hockey, exactly. Yeah. You know, and then you got Calgary and Vancouver coming up Monday, Tuesday, where you have a real opportunity to play against some Western Conference teams that are below you in these standings in terms of the actual points that they've earned this year. So it is interesting, and the Jets can sort of press a reset on the post-All-Star break schedule starting tonight against the Dallas Stars.
And one thing fans are going to want to start watching out for, and I know they got 32 games left. The team has 32 games left.
Yeah.
Regulation overtime wins, because what happens is you know, that's the
tiebreaker.
And so if you're Calgary, for example, and you have one more regulation overtime win, and those two teams end up tied, Calgary gets that spot. So if they're 5 points back, you know, it's, if you look at it, 5 points, 6 points, these things will now change, right?
Sure.
Because they're 5 points back from tying the Jets. Right now, that would be beating the Jets. So they don't need 6 points. They need five
because they have one more regulation and overtime win than the Jets do. You're absolutely right. That's why it's important. You know, from game one, you always want to win in regulation or at worst in the 4-on-4 overtime. Sure. Anyways, let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look at tonight's Jets-Stars game, and we'll tell you who's going to be the Jets goalie and what defensive lineup changes or pairing changes you're going to see on the Jets' back end. You're listening to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by our friends at Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Remus, turn your mic on back at the studio for a second. Is it on? I heard you pulled the old chat and cut today at line for the breakfast on the river with Bernstein's.
Yeah, Bernstein's Deli at Raw Almond on the river for another just over 2 hours. So if you're looking for a place for lunch, head down to the river.
It was packed there. Huge line.
I heard you pulled the chat and cut, though. That's chatting with somebody in line and cutting the people behind you.
We didn't actually cut. We just got our name down on the list with the people ahead of us.
Wow.
So that's the definition of cutting. You cut in front of people that had been waiting for longer.
Yeah, but we saw people that we were there, and we had.
I don't think you intended to meet them, did you?
Yeah, it was planned.
I'm skeptical.
That's not what you said pre-show.
And I know the people that you met there, and I don't know that you are necessarily socializing with those people all the time. Well, bad form by you.
I'll tell you, Drew, we haven't brought this up on here yet, but Richard was at the Date with a Star event on Wednesday, and it came up during our chat and cut, and apparently the people loved Richard.
Really?
Yes, apparently he came up, was very funny.
Well, Richard was a star in the support of the Learning Disabilities Association of Manitoba on Wednesday, and so... I'm sure you were glad to participate in that event.
I was. It was a great event.
Yeah?
For a great cause, and I had a great time.
That's good. And apparently the people you regaled with stories.
I had a great time. My table, everybody was really friendly, really welcoming, and I had a great time.
Well, there you go.
Absolutely.
That's very nice. Yeah,
time flew by. No, seriously, it flew by. We over dinner and drinks. It was a great crew, great conversation.
There you go. Yeah. Well, anyways, we're very charitable.
And I was able to listen, of course, to... yourself and Remus on my drive to the restaurant.
Excellent. Everything worked out then.
Well, it's not get crazy here.
The show maybe not so much, but the drive worked out.
I did like your rant on the World Cup, though. You know I share the same feelings.
Yes.
Remus was coming in and talking about how he didn't know what Eurovision was. Very interesting.
Yeah. Did you know what Eurovision was?
I did.
Okay.
Remus didn't.
What's Eurovision again? I totally forgot.
You forgot since Wednesday. You know, we'll tell you later. You know, look it up. You can Google it back at the studio in the meantime. Let's get talking about the Jets and the Stars. So the lineup changes, as I mentioned. First of all, Michael Hutchinson in net for the Jets tonight.
And I think that's the right move because Hutchinson's been the better of the two goalies. Don't have to tell anybody that, you know. I think he played better in the past two games. You know, he played better on Thursday than Pavlik did on Tuesday. You come with Hutchinson tonight, and then you're going to split the two games Monday, Tuesday.
Yeah.
And I would think you're going to give Hutchinson a little break after tonight. You play him on Tuesday against Vancouver and play Pavlik on Monday against Calgary. That's what I would say is how Maurice will go with it.
Probably. I mean, that's that would make sense, give him the 2 days off in between games, coming back fresh on Tuesday against Vancouver. Though it's arguable, you know, and we'll talk about the Calgary and Vancouver games later on in the show, because there's a debate to be had as to which game is the easier of the two games.
They're both good teams, Drew. I don't think there's an easier one or a harder one. You're talking about two teams, Calgary and Vancouver, that are 2 points apart from each other, and Calgary scored a bit more, but if you average it out, goals per game, very, very close. The team is very similar in the standings, so I would just go with the extra rest for the goaltender and an extra night and give Pavlik a Monday, because I think he's going to do the rotation.
Sure. Yeah. Now let's look at the Jets defense, which is going to be different tonight than we've seen for the last number of games.
A little bit surprising.
I'm a little bit surprised about this too.
Yeah.
The Ben Chiarot Dustin Byfuglien pairing, which has performed so well since the beginning of December, is being split up. Tobias Enstrom goes up to play on the left side with Dustin Byfuglien.
I've seen that before.
That familiar pairing we've seen so many times before is reunited tonight. Ben Chiarot is going to play with Zach Bogosian as the, I don't know, you can say they're the second pairing, but really it doesn't matter at this point in time.
I would consider them to be the third pairing.
Probably the third pairing. And then Mark Stewart and Jacob Trouba are your second pairing in that example. Stewart and Trouba, they get to play together again. They've been together really for the majority of the year. Comfortable with one another. This will be Chiarot's first time playing with a different defenseman than Dustin Byfuglien. Are you surprised at this decision by Coach Paul Maurice?
I'm a little bit surprised, Drew. It tells me that he hasn't been overly happy with the way things have gone, and he thinks there needs to be a change in the personnel, at least in how the personnel is employed. I think tells you something. That's one aspect of it. I think it also tells you probably about some kind of, the ice time and how it's going to be apportioned. I think that Enstrom and Byfuglien are going to be playing fairly big minutes. And it's going to tell us a lot about Ben Chiarot, because Dustin Byfuglien's been playing at a high level. And you can certainly give Ben Chiarot credit because he's been his partner during that time. But now how will Ben Chiarot play with Zach Bogosian, who is probably more difficult to play with in the sense that he's not as offensively gifted as Byfuglien and can't create out of Byfuglien's going to be able to create out of his own zone to put pressure in the offensive zone, which takes pressure off you defensively.
Sure.
Bogosian's not at that same level. And his passing skills aren't the same as Byfuglien's either, right? So, pass, boom, out of the zone or pass across, and you can break down the neutral zone alignment of the other team. It's going to be more pressure on him. So Chiarot, I think, you're going to see a little bit more about what Ben Chiarot's all about, and I think that's a good thing long term.
Well, Ben Chiarot's been playing averaging 18 minutes and 50 seconds time on ice per game.
Remember that, he has been, but Byfuglien played almost 30 last game, and he's been playing a lot with Byfuglien now, of course, different situations, power play, four and all that, but at the end of the day, you know that Tobias Enstrom and Dustin Bufflin can both move the puck, both skate, both create offense. And they're going to, you know, can they defend together? And remember, Tobias Enstrom is not Ben Chiarot in terms of kind of a stay-at-home guy.
Right.
I'm interested to see. We know that they can move the puck and transition real well. I'm interested to see how they defend. And especially now you talk about the new system, all that stuff, Claude Noel. I mean, let's talk about how this team, like, we haven't seen these guys play together under Paul Maurice yet.
No.
So
really
that'll be I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Well, that's what I was a little bit surprised to see it is, that, nothing against Tobias Enstrom or Dustin Bufflin. We know that they, were a dynamic offensive pairing when they were together, but their defensive shortcomings were, they certainly weren't insignificant. And so I'm a little bit surprised that they would that Coach Maurice would split the pairings up because, obviously they didn't perform very well. Nobody performed very well this past week. But to bring that unit back together, what do you think he's trying to get out of that pairing by putting it back together that maybe Chiarot and Bufflin or Enstrom and Bogosian didn't provide as a pairing?
I think this probably has more to do with Enstrom than it does with Bufflin. I think he wants to get more from Tobias Enstrom. And I think he thinks that Enstrom with Bufflin will perform better than Enstrom will with Bogosian. Bufflin's just a smarter defenseman than Bogosian is.
Sure.
And I think that this is what he's going to try and get with Enstrom. And I think you might now see a little bit more of a, loading up Enstrom and Bogosian, Bufflin at the in terms of minutes. And Trouba and Stewart, who didn't have their strongest game last game. And I think you might, we'll see if it's Bogosian and Chiarot kind of logging those third line minutes, those third pairing minutes, but at the end of the day, you're playing in a league where there's going to be those three lines you're going to have to really defend against. Everybody's fourth line is not exactly dangerous. And then you play situationally in terms of the rest of this power play, penalty kill. And
You mentioned power play. This might not be a fair question because we haven't seen how Paul Maurice is going to deploy the power play.
Sure.
But to you, does this tell you that maybe Jacob Trouba is going to get more minutes that used to be allocated to Zach Bogosian on the power play?
I don't know how they're going to do that yet, Drew. I want to see. I mean, again, there's not enough ice time to go around. Let's be clear. Like this, we should preface all this analysis by saying there's not enough ice time to go around.
Which is, some could say it's a good problem to have.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's a bad problem, but I'm just saying that is an issue. Like, good players need to play.
Sure.
Okay. Good players are not the fourth line guys who can get you a good, get you some value playing 10 minutes a game. Dustin Bufflin, Zach Bogosian, Jacob Trouba. They will play, in my opinion, better when they're playing 20-plus. So you can't play them all 20-plus, right? Unless you're going to switch sides and do all that jazz, which they're not going to do. So I think that it raises some issues. And then, I think this is your core down the stretch here. I don't think they're trading any of these top six guys before the deadline.
No.
I think in the summer there are decisions to make, which we can talk about later on. But in the interim, Paul Maurice has to decide now how he's going to employ these guys. And I think these past two games were a little bit of a kind of a sample for Paul Maurice to say, okay, how do I want to play these guys, and who do I want to play them with? I mean, maybe he's concerned Bufflin and Chiarot were getting a little apart. They're defensively, maybe they're making some mistakes. Enstrom and Bogosian. I think Enstrom compliments Bogosian more than Bogosian compliments Enstrom. So I think that might be why he's doing this. There's a lot of factors here.
Sure, and it'll be interesting. You talk about we said it's sort of a cliche on the show, but sort of riding your horses, and that's this decision is
you're playing more talented players here. I put it that way. Like Enstrom is more talented than Chiarot, and Bufflin's more talented than Bogosian.
Sure.
So you're going to ride more talented players.
And you're going to hope that they've sort of solved whatever defensive shortcomings they've had in past years. That's the question.
That's a leap a bit, I think. I think they're going to give it back, too, a bit. Can they get you enough offensively to, again, there's a value in getting out of your own zone and playing the offensive zone. And even if you have some defensive breakdowns, if you're not playing in the defensive zone as much, those breakdowns are not as important as they would be if you're always playing in your own zone.
Sure.
So that's something to take note of. Having said that, you still can't have those breakdowns because that puts more pressure on the forwards to defend, get more tired, and they're less apt to create offensive opportunities because they're more on their back and their heels. So this is you're going up, and I wonder tonight, what are you going to do tonight? Because let's talk about this.
Well, let's talk about the Dallas
Stars. You're playing Ben Sagan.
Yeah.
Are you playing Bufflin and Enstrom against Ben Sagan? Because hey, I would be concerned defensively that they can't handle that pairing.
Sure.
Because Enstrom, as you saw last game, Wayne Simmonds goes wide on him with his size. I mean, Ben can do that to you.
Sure.
Now, Enstrom is a left guy. Ben's a left winger. So, in reality, they shouldn't match up as much. And Bufflin should be able to handle him size-wise. But even so, Sagan burns right with speed. I mean, is Enstrom able to handle it? Do they break down against that pairing? Because that's an awfully good top line. I think starting to get going a little more with Jamie Benn here. So that would be a little bit of a concern. And I wonder if they go that matchup, that's the matchup tonight.
To watch.
For not only tonight, but for moving forward here.
Sure. You'll see if, you know, if you see it tonight, if you see Bufflin and Enstrom tonight against the, you know, the Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin line, you're going to know that going forward for the remainder of the next 32 games or whatever's left in the regular season, that Paul Maurice is planning on employing those two guys.
Well, we don't know that until they perform at a certain level.
Right, right.
If they perform at that level, you would assume so.
Sure, if he's able...
If they get burnt tonight, he's going to have to do something
then
different.
He's going to have to go back to the
drawing board.
Because
I think Jacob Trouba is his best defensive defenseman. And how are you going to, you know... I know Mark Stewart certainly isn't at the same level as Jacob Trouba. We know that.
Right.
So, what do you do there? I mean, are you then dropping Enstrom with Trouba? Like, there are options here.
Sure.
Better to have more options than less.
Right, absolutely.
But at the same time, I mean, you have to get into some kind of a groove here and get these guys comfortable. Guys need to know their roles. That is one thing. You talk to coaches, talk to people, and like, you need to define roles for players. And there's going to be a guy or two on this back end who does not like their role. Now, Sherrod can't really complain. Young guy, you know, he's not going to say much.
No.
So you can kind of demote him, whatever it may be. He'll deal with it. If you're playing a little, like, you know, Bogosian less or Trouba less, again, might not love it. Bufflin less, maybe. Might not love it. And that will be interesting because these guys need to know their roles down the stretch drive. Because if you have players who do not know their roles, it comes down to it, and there's a lack of identity there, that will affect their game.
Coach Pollock, you have to go out and you have to shut down the opponent's best forward group.
Yeah.
What defense are you? Who are your two defensemen that you're doing to do that?
Well, I think it's a matchup-based thing, right?
Sure.
So I think that's a game-by-game thing.
Well, so let's look at tonight's game. Who are you deploying that say, I want you to... I think you and you are the best able to shut down Tyler Seguin and Jamie Benn. Because really, I mean, you know, Jason Spezza is a good player. He's not the same Jason Spezza. Sean Horkoff is the center there with Alex Hemsky. You know, they're a good line. They're not a dominant line.
Yeah.
Who do you pick of the six defensemen that the Jets are going to employ today? Who do you pick to shut down Tyler Seguin and Jamie Benn?
You're talking of the three pairings?
Yeah, of the three pairings. Or even make your own pairing.
Well, my own pairing won't really matter because I think if you're probably looking at it, you might be looking at, say, Trouba and Enstrom. But we're not going to get... We're going to talk about who the actual pairings are here.
Yeah.
We're talking about who the actual pairings are.
Is it Bufflin and Enstrom, to your mind? You seem to be hedging a little bit, not confident, really.
I'm not that confident in that pairing, Drew. I would say...
Is that a function of you having seen them give it back defensively for too many years at this point?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would be concerned about it. Again, things can change because Bufflin has certainly changed his game.
Sure.
But I would generally lean... I know Trouba hasn't played his best hockey lately. I would generally lead to Trouba. If that happens to be with Stewart, then that might be the one I go with, and I load up the other guys against maybe the second line there, Spezza, and then I try and have them employed more offensively. Because you're going to defend a lot when you're playing. I know that's the issue, but you're going to defend a lot when you're playing against Seguin Benn.
Right. I agree with you, but you can then, if you...
And they both can shoot it, too. That's the big thing, right? So certain players, you know, they create offense, but like a Henrik Sedin, you're going to play against the Sedins on Tuesday night.
Mm-hmm.
Different kind of game, right?
Sure.
Henrik never shoots.
No, he's got fantastic vision and a world-class passer.
Right, but the idea is
but
like...
you can play him differently.
Right. Benn and Seguin, like you can't really... They can both move, too. Seguin especially is a strong skater. You get too close to them, they burn you. You back off. They can fire it. So you have to really be focused and communicating and skating especially well and always have your eye on where they are and what they're doing. I wonder if that pairing gets a little bit preoccupied with creating and then turns their head the wrong way and makes a mistake. Now, again, I know that they can certainly create offensively, and the guys that they're playing with at forward are going to need to help that as well, right?
Sure. Of course, five-man unit.
Of course, and that's important. But I would have some concerns about it, to put it that way. And you can probably, if you listen to this segment, you probably can tell.
We'll find out when the game starts at 6 p.m. tonight at MTS Center. You can hear it live on TSN 1290. Let's head to break. When we come back, we are going to talk about potential Jets targets at the upcoming trade deadline. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Well, it's not open yet, to be honest, Tim. But as soon as it opens, then that market is going to be fairly expansive. I mean, there are teams that are more than kicking tires on the Toronto Maple Leafs trying to get Winnick, as we talked about yesterday or the day before, the Pittsburgh Penguins made an offer last week. I know that the Winnipeg Jets, you know, would have considerable interest in Daniel Winnick. The Jets were in it right to the end in the offseason and trying to sign Winnick as an unrestricted free agent. He went for location and he opted to go to Toronto. So I know Cheveldayoff was part of a group of as many 20 teams represented last night in New Jersey watching the Devils and the Toronto Maple Leafs, and Winnick most definitely would be high on Cheveldayoff's want list as he looks for a top nine forward.
TSN insider Darren Dreger earlier this week speaking about Daniel Winnick, Toronto Maple Leafs forward, right winger, unrestricted free agent at the end of the season, and the supposed interest throughout the NHL and especially here in River City regarding Mr. Winnick. 3 goals, 16 assists, 19 points in 48 games so far with the Leafs, a plus 11 if you're one of the few who still subscribe to plus minus as a significant statistic. So, Richard, the question I have for you then, is Daniel Winnick the right sort of fit for the Jets' third-line right-wing spot, a third line that has been performing tremendously well in the last couple of games?
Yeah, I mean, Drew, I think he would be an upgrade. Chris Thorburn's been playing well, but again, you'd rather Chris Thorburn play on your fourth line. I think that's for sure. Yeah, for sure, I think he would be an upgrade. I don't know what he would cost. You heard Darren Dreger talking about the Jets having an interest in Daniel Winnick this past offseason, and he opts for location.
Yeah.
So if you want to read between the lines there, he picked living in Toronto over living in Winnipeg, I think for a variety of factors.
He's from Ontario, is he not?
I believe he is from Ontario.
Okay. So it's not like this is a guy from, you know, some other place.
In any event, I think the offer was from the Jets was better than the offer he took in Toronto.
Sure.
Put it that way. And longer term. So I think the Jets certainly have an interest, or had an interest, and I don't know why that would change. In Daniel Winnick. Although I shouldn't say I don't know why it would change, because if he wasn't willing to sign in Winnipeg for a duration of, say, 2-3 years.
Do you think that it was that big of a contract that the Jets put out on the table for him?
I think they may have offered, multiple years.
Okay.
And if they did and he was not willing to sign, what would make you think that he'd be willing to stay when free agency arrives, UFA status arrives?
Especially because he's probably acquitted himself pretty well this season,
yeah,
and made a market for himself in addition to the trade market that's going to exist over the next 5 weeks.
So if you look at it that way, then if the Jets are saying, well, he probably won't re-sign here,
yeah,
he may have less value to the Jets than he would to another team.
Sure.
And to be honest with you, what he brings to the table is some good qualities. A good checking player, bigger guy.
6'2", 210 pounds.
Can play a physical game, can do those things. It's not as if there aren't Daniel Winnicks available, though. So I don't want people to suddenly get preoccupied with a game name like Daniel Winnick. And certainly teams don't want to get in bidding wars for third-line players that are available fairly regularly, especially down the stretch when some teams fall out of it and their third-liners become available, especially pending UFA third-liners. So do I think the Jets need to improve their top nine? Absolutely. Do I think it needs to be Daniel Winnick? Well, he would be one guy who would improve it, but there are other guys.
Well, speaking about the other guys, I don't know where this chatter came from because it didn't make any sense, that Jagr was the guy that the Jets were looking at. I don't think at this point in his NHL career, I mean, obviously Jaromir Jagr would be a terrific upgrade. I don't think at this point in his NHL career, Jaromir Jagr's leaving the Eastern Conference and the Eastern Seaboard of the United States.
Well, I don't disagree. I don't think he cares where he plays. I think he just wants to play.
Well, but if, you know, there's also talk that Pittsburgh might be in on Jagr again, or, you know, look where he's gone over the last couple of years in terms of free agency.
Well, he'd go to Winnipeg over nowhere, I'll put it that way.
Sure, of course he'd go over in terms of playoff spots.
Yes.
You're right,
yeah.
He'd go to Winnipeg over nowhere. But I don't think it's going to be a function of Winnipeg over nowhere. I think there's going to be a lot of people, a lot of teams that have interest in Jaromir Jagr.
He'd be a significant upgrade.
Oh, he'd be a tremendous upgrade.
Now, he does wear down over throughout the year because he's an older player, but if you're trying to get into the playoffs, you'll worry about the playoffs later.
Well, when we saw the Jets play New Jersey here, he was the best player on the ice for the Devils still.
He was, yeah.
So, I mean, Jaromir Jagr would be a tremendous upgrade by all means, but I don't think it's realistic, in my opinion, that he would end up here over another Eastern Conference playoff contender that's looking for a push to get over the top. Because it's a lot easier for, you know, if he's willing to leave New Jersey to go to Pittsburgh or go to the Rangers, go to the Islanders or wherever.
But again, I think it's going to be best offer for the. I don't see him being the guy, Drew, but I think it'll be best offer, to be honest.
Sure. Well, I mean, that's usually how it works. And so, you know, okay, then back to the Winnick conversation, because
sure,
he's, you know, seems to be the one who's got the most talk around him. what would, you know, you're Kevin Cheveldayoff, you're not sure about, this guy's a rental right now, pure and simple. You're not sure if you can re-sign him even after the season, if you really like his performance on your team. What are you willing to give up for Daniel Winnick?
Well, I'm not giving up more than the third rounder for Daniel Winnick, which means you may not get him if somebody ups to a second. I wouldn't give up more than the third rounder for Daniel Winnick. Does he push you? Where does he take you?
Well, that's a very fair question.
I don't think too much further than where you are right now. So he's an upgrade, but I think personally, based on the way the team is built, you'd like a guy who can score a bit on that third line.
And he's not a terrific scorer by any stretch of the imagination. He's got 3 goals this year.
That's what I mean. So I just don't know if he's that big of an upgrade.
Sure.
Again, you know, I think he fits on different teams in different ways. I think in Winnipeg, they could use a guy. Because, again, you're going top 9 here.
You know, balanced scoring throughout the top 9.
That's right.
That's sort of been the match for the team.
That's why I keep going back, and I like him more than other guys do. I like Drew Stafford there.
Sure.
He can shoot it. He can create some offense. Get him out of there. He went to UND. He's familiar with the area. I mean, this is nothing new here. It's been a long time in Buffalo, and, you know, he has a hockey pedigree in terms of his dad with the Oilers and all that stuff. Like, he'd be a guy. I don't know what he checks out on some other scales there in terms of off the ice, but that'd be a guy who can put it in the net. That's what I'd be looking for from that third line right wing spot.
Well, and that's why the name that's always sort of come back to me along the same lines is a guy out of Carolina, Jiří Tlusty.
Yeah, different player.
Different player, but he's got the
Paul Maurice would have knowledge of Jiří Tlusty.
Certainly would. I mean,
I think Toronto and Carolina.
Toronto and Carolina.
Yeah. He can score. He's a talented player, Drew, but he will cost you a bit more. And what's the situation going to be in terms of this future?
Well, that's a very good question. And, I mean, I'm spitballing, obviously. We're both spitballing here in terms
of,
you know,
both spitballing,
guys who we think we could fit in. But you're right. If you're looking at the issue being you want somebody who can be a goal scorer.
And I just think based on the way the team is constructed, you want a guy who you can roll out in any situation in terms of and create some offense, right? You need, because again, I mean, Perreault's been excellent right now, but I mean, Scheifele hasn't been as effective lately, and you know this Lowry Kane combination, Thorburn's been good, but
it's not realistic that Chris Thorburn is all of a sudden going to. Morph. I mean, he might get in. I mean, he might get double digits.
If they continue to gel like this, you might say, hey, leave it and we'll play four. I don't know. I'm just like, you want to have some options, right?
So. Yeah, well, it seems like Paul Maurice wants nothing to do with TJ Gagliardi being a regular in his lineup.
Well, now Hauschuck's hurt.
Well, Hauschuck's hurt, and it's longer than day to day.
And Slater, he doesn't trust enough. So there is no fourth line right now.
No.
Based on the way that Maurice runs the bench. Again, I don't blame him. Fourth line doesn't have it. You know, it doesn't bring you much.
Especially with Matt Hallstrack.
Coach go through here and determine that.
Yeah, but you're right. Last year, though, the third line didn't give you much. This year, it's a little bit of an upgrade.
Yeah, no, for sure. You get a better roster. Yeah. No question.
Matt Hallstrack, for the record, placed on IR, of course. And according to Coach Paul Maurice, it's not day-to-day and it's not week-to-week. So it sounds like it's a longer-term injury for Matt Hallstrack. So
whatever the heck that means.
Whatever. I mean, God forbid you
actually... Why don't you just tell us it's 4 to 6 weeks? I mean, I don't know. What, is it a state secret?
It is a state secret. You know how ridiculous these
teams
are.
What is week to week? What does that mean? What does week to week mean?
It's now bimonthly to bimonthly, if I'm not mistaken. Or it might be semi-yearly.
Not day-to-day, week-to-week. Is like anything going to change on a guy that you signed at the end of the year, the off-season?
Like, no. There's no competitive advantage.
It's not like Brian Little here. Like,
even so, the guy's injured. I mean, I don't know. I never understand.
The term of how long he's out for. You don't have to tell us the injury then. You can say the term, expect him to be out 3 weeks or... They're always going to highball, but expect them to be out, whatever. It's not day-to-day, not week-to-week. Can you give us a ballpark?
No. For whatever reason, you know how the NHL works. That's why they need more gambling in the NHL. Because if it was like the NFL, where they tell you everything wrong with the guy,
exactly,
he missed practice because he had a bit of a hangnail.
He didn't eat the toast on his plate because...
Yeah. Anyways, that's the NHL problem versus or a gambling-related issue versus not a gambling-related issue. In any event, it is something that the Jets, you know, their fourth line now, like you said.
That's been the issue all year, though.
Right, of course it's been the issue all year, and you're a lot more... I don't think that if they get a third line right winger...
It won't change it enough.
No, I mean,
I don't think they're going to add two guys either. We had a caller on the post-game show on Thursday. Darren had a caller say, you know, do you think they get two guys? I don't think so.
I don't think
two
so
forwards.
Either. They haven't made... I mean, the team has barely made a trade over the last 3 years.
Right.
They're not obviously going to make two trades for bona fide NHL players.
I think it'll be like, you know, third, fourth round pick. Maybe if they really like the deal, a second, but likely not.
What about Postma? How does Postma play?
Postma, maybe. But he's, again, not going to get you much.
Really? Yeah. Right. Even at his, I know he hasn't shown really anything, and he had this opportunity.
When is he going to get you?
Well, I don't know. There's always people that are interested in young defensemen in the NHL.
Sure. I mean, he's not that young anymore.
I know he's not that young anymore, but he's got offensive upside, or at least the reputation is that he has offensive upside.
He had a very long, and again, he's trying hard. He's a good kid, but he had a long audition here, an opportunity to play himself into a role or a role in Winnipeg or elsewhere, and certainly hasn't done that. And he's been on the roster for quite a while and hasn't been playing in the AHL because of that one-way contract status. You know, at some point, you have to make a decision on him, and exactly.
Yeah. So let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to look at the differences in goal support that Michael Hutchinson and Andre Pavlik have been receiving this year. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Shortly before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, proper fitting custom-made mouth guard is an essential part of your protective equipment. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center. They'll get you hooked up. Dr. Les Rikus will custom make you a mouth guard so that you can keep your teeth where they should be. And, of course, they do help with concussion prevention as well. Check them out online, lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Richard, some interesting numbers have borne out regarding the Jets' goaltending and the amount of goal support each of the goalies is receiving. Now, I think, you know, we can both agree, at least, that Michael Hutchinson has been the better of the two goaltenders this year.
Yeah, I think that'd be fair.
Okay, so as long as we're in agreement on that
point. Thank you, Drew.
Okay, that's good insight. I know that you just won't get that anywhere else.
Nowhere else,
but that's some good insight. But the Jets are scoring a ton more goals.
Yeah.
For Michael Hutchinson than they are for Andre Pavlik. And the numbers are really interesting. In Michael Hutchinson's 20 starts, the Jets have scored 68 goals. In Andre Pavlik's 30 starts, the Jets have only scored 4 more goals, 72 goals this season. And we'll get into some more of the numbers that a friend of yours,
yeah,
give credit,
Scott Newman, yeah.
Has done some research on this sort of thing.
He has been following it and seeing, you know, I don't know what the percentages are in terms of, you know, if the Jets are a little more fortunate in terms of when they're playing with Hutchinson as opposed to with Andre Pavlik, but they certainly have been scoring more. I mean, that much for sure. So, you know, if you want to look at it, you have to wonder, because anybody who plays hockey, you know, I mean, if you feel more comfortable with the goal with a certain goalie in net, you might take a chance, you might play a little bit more free. It's something sometimes it's hard to describe.
Sure.
You just know it's the way you feel when you play with a goaltender who's performing better than another one. You're more apt to cover up, less pinching, maybe less apt to create offense that way. There's a lot of factors, and to see that basically they've got the same amount of goal support in 10 less starts, it's very interesting.
Sure. The numbers even more. In 21 starts so far this year, Michael Hutchinson.
This is about
a week ago,
yeah.
So it's pretty close to, you know, without the Pennsylvania game. So take the Pennsylvania games out of the equation. In his last in his 21 starts, Michael Hutchinson has received 4 or more goals in 47.6% of those starts. In Andre Pavlik's 30 starts, he has received 4 or more goals only 4 times, 13.3%. So that's a pretty wide disparity.
For sure.
In terms of the Jets' goal-scoring ability between when Michael Hutchinson's in net and when Andre Pavlik's in net. To you, do you think the Jets are more confident playing in front of Michael Hutchinson than Andre Pavlik?
You know, you don't know for sure, but again, Drew, I go back to what I just said. When you play with certain guys between the pipes, you seem to play a certain style.
Sure.
And for whatever reason, it appears that the Jets seem to be creating more offense with Michael Hutchinson in net. And that may speak, again, we don't know for sure, and still been only a little over half a season, but playing freely, creating offense, and you wonder if this plays into Andre Pavlik's confidence, too. I mean, there's so many factors here, right? Is Andre Pavlik thinking these guys aren't putting up as much offense for me? Maybe they don't think it's highly of me, whatever me, or it's putting more pressure on him and he's not performing as well. There's a lot of factors that go into it, and I think it's interesting to see. Like, you look at those stats, you're like, wow.
In whole games played, when the Jets score two or more goals, Andre Pavlik is 8-5-2. The two are the shootouts. We're just so, you know, because shootouts, once you get to the actual shootout, is a bit of a crapshoot. So when the Jets score two or more goals in a game, Andre Pavlik is 8-5-2. Michael Hutchinson, 9-1. I mean, you know, pretty much.
I mean, nothing. Just so you know, listeners, no, what we're saying is not that Hutchinson hasn't played better than Pavlik. He has.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just trying to figure out, that, you know, it's interesting to see the goal support that he's received as well. Like, take out the wins, he's played better. But even you put in the wins and you see the support they're getting, and we're like, whoa, it's interesting to know.
That's right. So, I mean, we asked the question last week on the show about, you know, how many starts you think Michael Hutchinson was going to get in the last 34 games versus Andre Pavlik. Yes. And, you know, so far, I guess, you know, he's getting, you know, two of the first three starts.
Right, and you're assuming three out of the first five.
Right. It seems safe to say that Andre Pavlik's not going to go back-to-back Monday, Tuesday, and neither is Michael Hutchinson going to get four straight starts.
And the way Hutchinson's played against Chicago, you're assuming it's going to be 4-6.
Sure. And then, really, Andre, Paul Maurice can do what he wants in the Chicago game because there's the 2 days off. You got Wednesday and Thursday off.
And then you'd say, okay, so then there you get. So far, you know, if we project forward, he'd have played 66% of the games.
Right. Which is sort of the flip side of what Andre Pavlik played in the first half of the season.
30-20 kind of thing.
30-20, you know, give or take, you know, 60%, 40%, close enough. You know, is it, you know, at some point in time, I mean, obviously Hutchinson's played better.
And you're
the team seems to play better in front of him.
You have to make sure that you get the points while you can, and at some point you have to play the better goaltender, the goaltender who's been playing better, more.
Yeah.
And I think you're starting to see that now, and I think that will play itself out over the course of the year. Almost has to, unless Hutchinson falters. Again, he hasn't played a lot, so we don't know for sure, right? And that's the big thing. He hasn't played a ton, so if he hasn't played a ton, then we don't know, will he tire down the stretch? Well, that's something that we'll learn.
No idea where that came from. Absolutely no idea. I'm not sure if that was even on air, but some
is Remus,
little depth.
Is Remus watching videos back? Remus, pop on for a second here.
No one heard that on air.
Were you watching death metal video there?
That's no, I'm watching
it. It's hard to do analysis when I'm hearing, like, Rage Against the Machine with Tom Morello. I don't know who that was there.
No one heard it on air, so you can just ignore it.
Okay, well, we didn't know if anybody could hear it on air or not, Remus, but thank you for your contribution, as usual. Back to the Hutchinson-Pavlik debate there. You know, at some point in time, I think you have to sort of start to ride him, and does he become...
That's what they're doing, though. That's what they're doing. That's what they're going to do here. And I think that's what you have to do. Now, Paul Maurice has handled this really well so far. In terms of the locker room and things like that. Now, you could say, oh, he hasn't played Hutchinson enough. Well, they're in the playoffs right now, and they're sitting in a pretty good position. So I think overall, the way he's handled it is pretty good. I've been impressed. But now you're getting down the stretch. Games get harder. You saw the last two games. Games are more important, certainly. You know, in any game, you shift a ton. So in the standings, you really can. So you have to go with the guy who's just playing better. And you've given them both. Also, the thing is, you have to give Paul Maurice credit for giving them both a chance. I mean, they both played a minimum of, 20 games here. So that's a pretty good shot at seeing how they're playing.
Sure.
And then you go with it. You give them their shot, and you go with it. And again, Paul Maurice, and Darren mentioned this on Thursday's postgame, he's had a history of riding guys, too. He's ridden Artur Zerbe and different guys before, so it's not as if he's averse to that.
Right. So. He just wanted to, you know, which is, makes sense because, you know, he's never seen Michael Hutchinson really except for the couple games at the end of last year.
Exactly.
So, you know, you take your first half of the year and you see what you have. And you see what you have in terms of your goaltending. And I think he's probably come to the conclusion after, you know, the first half of the season up to the All-Star break, well, I have two guys I can rely on to some degree. Mm-hmm. And Michael Hutchinson's probably more reliable than Andre Pavlik, but it's not...
It's not like you're dealing with an Anders Lindback like you're in Dallas and wondering who can even stop when your second guy's in.
Right. It's not like you can't have confidence in putting Andre Pavlik in the net.
On back-to-back.
Yeah, you know, in a back-to-back situation coming up Monday,
or,
Tuesday.
Or, you know, 5-7, things like that.
Exactly.
Or 4-and whatever it is. Yeah.
You know, and, you know, every team plays 5-7s and 6-8s.
Right, they all play the same.
You can always find it depending on when you look at start and stop days. I was a little surprised he went with Pavlik on Tuesday in Pittsburgh.
Well,
given historically,
yeah,
Pavlik's been terrible in Pittsburgh.
I just think he put Pavlik in. He's going to play him each in the first two games, one of them in each game. And he put Pavlik in against the Pittsburgh team without Crosby Malkin and gave him an easier matchup because Philly has got more firepower when those two guys aren't in the lineup in Pittsburgh. And that's what he did.
Sure.
And, I mean, if you're going to play them both, make sure they're both in the game after a little break. I don't mind those decisions. I have no issue with those decisions.
Fair enough. If you're okay with it, then I'm okay with it.
I don't know if that's a good idea, but...
Well, it is what it is in that sense. So the Jets, it's going to be Kari Lehtonen in net for Dallas tonight, and it's going to be Michael Hutchinson.
He's a very good goaltender, Kari Lehtonen.
Yeah,
his stats may not show how good he is, but I think he's been better than probably the stats do show, and I've always been a big fan of his. He's very good goaltender. So the Jets are in tough tonight. Remember, the Jets, last time they played, it was Lindback against Pavlik.
That's right.
Lehtonen is going to be a tough tender to beat tonight. And this Dallas team, again, we talked about with Mike Halleck, we're going to have Daryl Ray on later in the show. This Dallas team that you saw on the road, you got a little view into how they play now. You add Jason Demers in. You add in Klingberg.
John Klingberg was fantastic in the game the Jets won in Dallas.
Well, your ability to get the puck out of your own zone and the transition game with some offensively skilled players like they have in Spezza and all those guys, and Sagan, all those guys, so much better than it was 10 games into the season because you have different personnel.
Sure.
Puck-moving skills are so important to the way Dallas now plays, and they can go back and forth. I mean, they'll give you a bit. They'll give you a bit defensively, for sure.
Yeah.
But they can also score on you. So it should be a fun one tonight. There's some high-end skill here. They like to play a pretty fast-paced game. And if there could be some back and forth in this one. The Jets just don't want it to be a back and forth in the style that it was on Thursday in Philadelphia.
No, the Jets have to. They can't. You know, they have to be able to take advantage of sort of the bottom pairings a little bit of the Stars' defense, because you know it. Klingberg offensively inclined, Goligoski, you know,
offensively inclined.
Schlemko and Daly. There's that.
Offensively inclined.
Yeah.
Daly's a pretty solid two-way guy. Jordy Benn and Jason Demers.
Jordy Benn's your solid stay-at-home guy, and Jason Demers is. He'll take his offensive risks. But again, that's a good amount of puck-moving defensemen on your back end there. And better defense than I think they had earlier in the year. So I would be... you're facing a different squad here.
Yeah.
This is a good team. If they had this team all year, I think they might be in the playoff spot right now.
John Klingberg is really the guy I think fans should sort of pay attention to on the Stars' back end, given how well he played when the Jets played there in Dallas a couple weeks ago. Carl Klingberg, of course, Jets prospect.
Carl Klingberg drew sort of interrupt there and also reminds some of Sergei Zubov. That's high praise. I think Sergei Zubov is a tremendous defenseman. But, you know, he's not going to be the most dynamic skater, but he reads the play really well. The puck goes to where it needs to go, and it goes there with ease. And that certainly helps this squad.
Absolutely. The 10 to break. When we come back, we're going to look forward to Monday and Tuesday night when the Jets and the Flames play in Calgary and the Jets and the Canucks play in Vancouver. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Alongside Richard Pollock, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We welcome you back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the longest-running independent comedy club in North America. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, Last Night in Town, a concert series event. Deborah DiGiovanni, she's been killing it all week long, just terrific comedian. Tickets all sold out. So, unfortunately, or I guess fortunately, really,
yeah.
You're a little SOL on that front. Big sold-out sign there on the Rumors website. Check out all their upcoming acts, rumorscomedyclub.com. I don't know if you heard when Gary and Andrew had J.B. Smoove, comedian. Of course, you better know him as Leon from Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Leon, yeah.
They had him on when they're down at Radio Row at the Super Bowl, and they had a good chat about Rumors on, I think that was Thursday night, if I'm not mistaken. They had a good chat with JB about coming up to Rumors, and so it was very entertaining. Check them out, rumorscomedyclub.com. Richie, Jets finally, they're heading west in Canada for the first time this year on Monday and Tuesday as they head to Calgary on Monday night and then Vancouver on Tuesday night. Two teams that we really haven't seen. We haven't seen the Canucks at all. Sort of bizarre this late in the season, you know, yeah. Beginning of February, you still haven't seen the Vancouver Canucks, and we haven't seen the Calgary Flames since the second home game of the season, way back in October.
Yeah.
So these are two teams that, you know, went through, nobody really had a lot of expectations for them at the beginning of the season, especially the Calgary Flames, given their status as, you know, a young team whose future was bright, certainly, but nobody expected that today, January 31st, one day before February, that they'd still be in a playoff spot, the second wild card spot, with 55 points.
Again, this is a good team. And, you know, when you look at the Calgary Flames and you think, okay, you know, why are they good? Well, I mean, the power play, penalty kill, are both not very good.
Right.
And so you think, okay, you know, 5-on-5, they're top half of the league, you know, close to the Jets there. But, again, when I look at this team, I look at the ability of their defensemen to join the rush and create, lessen the pressure in the defensive zone and create rush opportunities for their young talent. And, you know, when you speak about young talent, I mean, Drew, boy, you have to love the future in Calgary up front.
Sure.
Sean Monahan, Johnny Gaudreau, you know, you hear now Sam Bennett's going to be skating. There's nice pieces there that they have, and there's some other guys, too, and maybe the role of Michael Backlund changes from initial expectations upon draft to more of a checking role.
Yeah.
We'll talk to George Johnson of the Calgary Herald about these things, but you signed TJ Brody. You have a nice young core there. They solidified it with goaltending and a veteran presence.
Well,
and Bob Harley gets his extension, so it's a you know, when you talk all about Toronto and Edmonton, all that about, you know, or Toronto, you can't rebuild. Well, Calgary's really a prime example of how you do rebuild.
Well, if you rebuild with, you know, good decisions, yep, and you let your players, first of all, you draft you know, extremely well. I mean, that's what they've done with Sean Monahan, of course, and I mean, and Johnny Gaudreau is, I mean, he's a fourth round pick, so he's, I mean, they just hit a home run on that front.
He's a dynamic player, Drew.
Yeah,
he's a dynamic player.
Yeah, and for a Hobie Baker winner last year in, yeah, college at Boston College.
Doesn't always translate either, but his game translates.
Yeah.
Exceptionally skilled.
Just tremendous player. But I think there's certainly an argument to be made, and we talk a lot here about Matthew Perreault as an important free agent signing.
Yeah.
I think there's an argument to be made that the most important free agent signing in the NHL this year, yeah, might be Jonas Hiller in the back, to sort of just solidify the goaltending of the Calgary Flames.
Well, when you bring in a, you know, on a young team, and we've had this discussion on the show before, on a young team, it's imperative to have really good goaltending or just a veteran presence back there. Because when you don't have that, and the reason I say that is because look at Vancouver, for example, and we're kind of tying these two teams together because the Jets are playing both of these teams.
Yeah, back to back.
You look at Ryan Miller, same idea. If you're going with the kind of a team in transition, and then obviously this, the Canucks have some veteran guys and, you know, like Sedins and all those guys that are riding, and on Bjeks and Edler and those guys in the back end. But at the end of the day, when you're going to be a team in transition, you want to be able to rely on your netminders to provide you with something that you know, with a consistency. And that's the thing, right? If you're just going to ride out with young, unestablished netminders, then you're putting the confidence of your defensemen especially at risk. And maybe guys don't develop as well if a mistake is always in the back of the net. So you look at Jonas Hiller, he gives you he'll give you the .914 save percentage, and you can look at the numbers. But again, it's the steadying influence of his presence. I've been in the playoffs. I know what it's like. I've been in the Olympics.
Yeah.
And Ryan Miller, same idea. I've been there before, so you guys can trust me, and you can do things on the ice. And we talked about the goals last segment, goals four for Hutchinson and Pavlik. The idea is, you kind of have an idea of what you're getting. And with Miller and with Hiller, the Western, you know, without Kiprusov there, did you really know what you were getting?
Well, no.
And with Luongo, you knew what you were getting, but the musical chairs there was making everybody, you know, lose confidence in themselves and,
sure,
and their teammates. So
was more a fault of management in Vancouver,
sure,
than it was the players themselves.
But it shows you the decisions that management make have an effect on the players.
Absolutely.
The goaltenders and an indirect effect on his teammates.
Sure.
So what they've done is they solidified the between the pipes.
Well, and you look at Calgary last year, they were bouncing back and forth between, you know, Kari Ramo,
right,
and the guy who's now in Colorado, whose name escapes me. Red O'Bara.
Red O'Bara, yeah.
Yeah. And not, neither of those guys, you know, could really carry the ball on a regular basis.
That's right.
And, I mean, players have limitations.
Look at Edmonton.
Well, sure.
Take an example.
If Edmonton goes out and gets Jonas Hiller, they get a similar veteran,
yeah,
goaltender, as opposed to
Scrivens
always trying.
And
yeah, as opposed to assuming that Ben Scrivens is ready for the job. Which,
maybe Justin Schultz develops at a better pace.
Sure. And, you know, exactly. And before, you know, Scrivens and Fast, whoever they're, I mean, who are they running on? You know, Dubnyk, who obviously had the issues. And, I mean, maybe that, maybe Dubnyk's good play in Phoenix this year tells you that maybe it wasn't so much him as it was the organization and the structure and everything else that was going on in Edmonton.
What else, you know?
But, you know,
did Dubnyk come in with an established veteran netminder that he had to push and learn under?
Of course not.
I don't recall that he did.
Of course not. You always, you have these guys in Edmonton who are, you're assuming that they're able to be up for the challenge of being a number one bona fide goaltender who's going to put up that 912, 914, 915 save percentage and make the saves that keeps your team in the game.
Just give you a consistency, and that's what you want. Now, you look at Calgary overall, Drew, they have a never-say-die attitude, and when you look at it and watch them play, their effort level is high.
Sure.
The Jets have had a really good effort level this year, and that's the thing. Like, they work hard. They don't give up on games, and you say, oh, you know, no teams give up on games. That's not true.
Yeah.
There are teams that do give up on games in Milton. Calgary does not. They play hard for Bob Hartley, which is a testament to his coaching ability. Him and Marty Jelinek there have done a real nice job behind the bench. It's a young team. A young team that people expected to completely fade away, and they have not done that. So,
you look at their forward group in Calgary, and aside from Goudreau and Monahan and Hudler, everybody else is, you know, they don't have another forward who's got 20 points.
Mm-hmm. So which, if you saw the list, wouldn't be surprising to you.
Sure, it's not that
certainly
surprising.
Certainly they missed Curtis Glenross there and an injury and such, but I agree with you, Drew. Yeah. I mean, you look at it and you say it's a testament to, you know, how well their defense has performed offensively.
Absolutely.
And Mark Giordano and T.J. Brody. That's crazy.
Mark Giordano, 41 points in 49 games, and T.J. Brody, 30 points in 49 games. You're right.
Together, 71 points from their top two defensemen.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
And they're going to easily probably break, they should break the 100-point total when you look at the two of them combined this year. I mean, the Calgary Flames are really they're a testament to how to properly rebuild a franchise.
We had Brad Treliving on, their general manager, and you can hear it's a polished guy, a guy who's confident in his abilities to evaluate talent, and a guy who sees the long term being what the real focus is. No short term fixes for a team that might be on the cusp of making the playoffs. Because at the end of the day, if they make the playoffs now, that's not going to define their franchise. It's down the road. How do they define their franchise?
You make the playoffs in Calgary this year, and they're going to be, I think they're going to be in it right till the end. Whether or not they end up holding off the Los Angeles Kings, or if somebody else falls down and everything else, is still to be determined.
Yeah.
But these important games for these young players, when they're really, there's no pressure on them. If they fall a point or 2 points or 3 points shy of the playoffs, nobody's going to criticize. They're going to say, what a great year. We expected nothing. You gave us 82 games of entertainment. And these teams and these players, as a result, will have developed better and will be hungrier in years to come get to the taste that they just missed out on. And then you look at the Vancouver Canucks, and they're sort of, like you said, they're not quite in the same position because they don't have any of the veteran talent that the...
I mean, you have your Bo Horvat, and we'll ask Jim Jamieson about coming up in the hour three from the Vancouver province there.
That's right.
But you're still a team relying on the Sedins, which we'll ask Jim Jamieson about as we looking at the stats preparing for the show.
Exact same stat line.
Same goals, same assists, same points. It's like
same games played.
They're
twins, all right.
It's so weird.
I know.
But they're still relying on those two guys as their top-heavy offensive producers. And if you look at it in reality, and I haven't seen Vancouver play as much as I have in past years, but still when you see them play, their second line scoring is not what it once was, you know, partly due to... Probably more than partly, in large part due to the fact that Ryan Kessler is now playing in Anaheim.
Sure.
Okay, Nick Bonino started off really well, hasn't necessarily
faded
performed
since then. Yeah,
up to those levels since the beginning of the season. So they lack in that in the scoring and depth scoring respect, and they also you lose Kevin Bieks on the back end, that's an issue, and they still have a lot of talent to stay in it. But like when you're looking at the trajectory of the franchise, still need to see more.
Sure.
When you look at Jim Benning, he created some nice young talent there. He's got Jake Virtanen, who they saw in the World Juniors, kind of an up-and-down guy. He can really shoot it.
Yeah.
So they got some talent. We mentioned Bo Horvat. And
Jared McCann, the first-round pick this year as well.
He's a good skater. He's a good stick handler. So, you got some skill coming through the system.
Yeah.
But that's a little bit farther away than some of the Calgary guys who are already contributing. I mean, look at Sean Monahan's performance this year again. Like, wow, I mean, he's a good, responsible two-way player, too. Yeah. So,
and he's more than just a boring Twitter account.
Yes, exactly.
But, I mean, you're right. And then you see Johnny Gaudreau, and, I mean, you see the joy in his game.
He's upper echelon skill, though, Drew, right?
Yeah.
That's the thing. I'm not saying Monahan isn't, but he's upper echelon skill.
Well, you see,
and he's an older player. Remember, you go through
that's what he's
the college
through the
system.
Wars.
There's no rush. And that gives you confidence. Now, you sure, there's an adjustment, not playing on the weekends and playing a lot in the travel, and then everybody's got to go through it if they played in the NCAA. But you're coming through it, and you're playing at a level. Not many guys can do Jacob Trouba year in college, boom, come in and have an effect. That's rare because of his talent level.
Right.
And his size. Johnny Gaudreau is not big. He's been able to refine his game.
That's putting a mild...
Right, he's been able to refine his game without much pressure because the team was clearly rebuilding.
Yeah.
Now he's able to jump in and have an effect. And remember, at the beginning of the season, Bob Harley made him sit up in the press box. Take a view of the game from afar. It's certainly helped him.
Well, you look at Johnny Gaudreau, and for Jets fans, you see the success he has at 5'9 and 150 pounds.
You think Nick Petan.
And you think Nick Petan. Yeah. And you hope that he can be some version of Johnny Gaudreau or replicate some version of that success, and you're thrilled. And you look at Nick Ehlers, because obviously Nick Ehlers also not a big guy.
Yeah.
So you look at that, and you say, you know, size is certainly a factor in the NHL, but at some point in time, if you're that talented and you're that skillful,
yeah, and Ehlers
you find a way to succeed.
And Ehlers skates better than Petan, so he'd have even more of a chance, I think. He's even higher level of offensive skill.
Let's head to break. When we return, we're going to look around the NHL at possible trade rumors and players who might be on the block, aside from those that we discussed earlier in the program. 1:15 in the afternoon, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290 Radio. Very pleased to welcome to the program as our new sponsor, Royal Sports, the city's number one hockey shop, plus so much more, like soccer to snowboard since 1974. So that's Royal Sports. Be sure to check them out online. Three locations to serve you. The flagship location, of course, 750 Pembina Highway and then 650 Raleigh Avenue as well. Pleased to welcome Royal Sports on board as a sponsor of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
I heard Remus was going there to frame the stick that he scored a hat trick with last week in rec hockey.
Really? Another hat trick? Or is this a different hat trick than he had before? That was his birthday hat trick,
right?
That's
right, yes.
Okay. I assumed he already had it up in, you know, bronze like you do in your baby shoes yeah. when you're a kid or something. Assume that's replaced the baby shoes on his parents' mantle there. Anyways, welcome back to the show. Talk about some trade rumors throughout the NHL as we are, it looks like, a little more. I guess February's got 28 days in it.
30 days away, Drew.
Right, 30 days. It's not a leap year, is it?
I think it is a leap year.
Is it?
I think it is a leap year. Is it a leap year?
No, I thought leap years are always on even years.
I don't know.
It's 2015, so I don't think it's a leap year.
I'll tell you right now if it's a leap year.
Anyways, Monday, March the 2nd, of course.
It's not a leap year.
It's not a leap year. Okay, see, I told you I was right.
30 days away, though, trade deadline.
30 days from the NHL trade deadline, Monday, March the 2nd. Special edition, of course, of NHL Midweek, yeah. That coming Monday, where we will wrap up the day's events on the NHL trade deadline. I think we're usually pretty confident. You get enough trades on that day to have a special edition of the program. We start in New York, though, where Larry Brooks of the New York Post reports Rangers defenseman John Moore is on the trade block.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we know that John Moore's got the size.
Yeah, you know, John Moore's got the size, Drew, and he's got the skating ability. He can carve the ice up pretty well. He's a very good skater for a big guy. I mean, this is a couple of things. You wonder if John Moore is...
He's fallen out of favor with Olambino.
Yeah, he's fallen out of favor, Drew, and I don't know a ton about his skill level, so I don't want to speak to that. He can certainly move around there. I think when you're looking at John Moore, you're looking at a situation of, well, how many more defensemen can we pay here? When they pay Mark Stahl big money, don't have an issue with that. Really like Mark Stahl's game. When you're paying Ryan McDonagh on a very team-friendly deal, you're still paying him. When you're paying Dan Girardi big money, he's the heart and soul of that team, and defenseman.
Dan
Boyle right now. You can't pay somebody else.
Sure.
I'm not saying that John Moore warrants a lot of more money, but you have to stop it somewhere, and you got Kevin Klein there as well. So you have to be able to bring three young players who are cheap, and John Moore eventually is not going to be cheap, or not going to be as cheap as he is right now.
Right.
And you have to make a move.
Well, I mean, he was even being healthy scratched. He was healthy scratched in 11 of the previous 17 games for the Rangers. So, I mean, there's a lot of talk that he's back in the lineup only to be showcased, to be traded, you know. He's got the size that teams always, you know, seem to obsess over.
Sure, I mean, there's going to be a team that will take a chance on John Moore. I don't think there's any question about that. But what's the cost going to be?
Well, that's what's going to be my next question.
So, and, you know, if he's not drawing into the New York lineup on a regular basis, they're not going to have a huge loss on a go forward playoff basis. So that's what you have to, okay, so it's not a huge loss from the team as it moves forward and all the big minutes are really going to be eaten up by their top four guys. Then you can trade him without really needing to get something back on the active roster. Now, they may prefer to get something up front to have a little more depth. Some of their guys, say like Tanner Glass, talked to Andrew Gross last week of the Bergen Record, haven't turned out.
Right.
And Jets fans, obviously, are well aware of what Tanner Glass brings to the table. And, you know, he has some deficiencies in his game as well, for certain. So I don't know if it's going to be something like they trade John Moore to a team looking for some young defensemen. Maybe it's Colorado, and they get an offensive player or a forward who can play a checking role for them, who can fill out their top 12 going into the playoffs. Because you look at the Eastern Conference playoffs, there is separation now, right? The Bruins and the Rangers are pretty solidly
in
those
spots.
Seems
like the top 8 is pretty set in the Eastern Conference.
So then your trades are made more so on a basis of how do we match up in the playoffs, not we need to get into the playoffs. And those are two different things.
Sure. Antoine Vermette out of the Arizona Coyotes, we've heard his name bandied about for weeks on end now. And Bob McKenzie reporting earlier this week that the cost for Vermette might be a first-round pick and a decent prospect. I mean, Vermette's a good player.
Yep.
Is he a difference maker that you're willing to give up a first and a decent prospect for him?
I guess two different questions. Is he a difference maker? Yes. Would I give up a first and a prospect for him? No. Maybe a second and a prospect, depending on what the prospect is. But if you have enough got teams offering a second, one team's got to offer a first. Now, it might be a first next, not this year, but next year.
Sure.
Okay. I don't know what next year's draft is like. I know this year's draft is exceptionally deep. So it might be, you know, we'll wait for next year. We still think our team will be good. We think he can make a difference. I do think he can make a difference. He can play center. He can play wing. He's a smart player. He can play power play. He can play PK. You know, he can stick handle. He can move the puck. He's a good player. And there's going to be a market. He's a good player and a good team. And playoff teams can use guys like him because his role can change depending on what you
smart
need
from player.
Him. Yes, depending on what you need from him.
You know, it seems like... the problem is you can't really... There's no way of quantifying hockey intelligence. But for the players that have a high hockey IQ, and we have a few of them on the Jets that have, you know, Bufflin's got a high hockey IQ. You know, Matthew Perreault's probably got a pretty high hockey IQ. Yeah. It's hard to quantify that in a stat. But guys like that, especially in the playoffs, I think are key for teams to have.
Yeah, and guys who can play different roles. You mentioned Matthew Perreault and Dustin Bufflin, two guys who actually can play different roles depending
sure.
on what you need.
Flexibility and everything.
And that probably that speaks to, Drew, I think, their ability to adjust, and they're smart. So I think those go hand in hand. And a guy like Antoine Vermette, I think, could be a very effective player. We talked about Boston. We talked about Washington. Again, there's not many teams I can look at and say, oh, they couldn't use him. You know?
Yeah.
Did Montreal maybe want him? I don't know. So there's a bunch of teams that could use him. And that's the only in Eastern Conference, really. And you look at the Western Conference, I don't think Don Maloney's going to care which conference he trades him to so long as he gets a good return.
Sure. I mean, the Coyotes are far away from competing ever, so it's not like Antoine Vermette's going to eventually stand in the way between them and a Stanley Cup Finals
right.
appearance or anything.
But I think you'll get at least a second and a good prospect, or a first and, I think, a lesser prospect.
In Ottawa, David Legwand was a healthy scratch for the final two games. Pardon me, for the most recent couple games after the All-Star break. He signed in Ottawa. He's 34 years old. He signed a two-year deal this past summer. Really struggling this year in the nation's capital, and he's supposedly
the
on
the... signing made no sense, but yeah, keep going.
He's supposedly on the trade block as well.
Yeah.
It's a guy who was, you know, a stalwart in Nashville for so many years, went to Detroit last year at the trade deadline, didn't really do much for the Red Wings, who were desperately in need of a centerman.
With so many injuries
last year. And then this year, in the offseason, went to Ottawa, where things haven't worked out for him. He's got 19 points in 45 games, though. So his numbers aren't terrible. It's just for whatever reason he's been in the doghouse of head coach David Cameron.
He's been miscast to me as a scorer. He's not a scorer. He's not the most offensively gifted guy or the smartest offensive player. Very good skater. A pretty big body. I think he's better off in a third-line center role, and the question is, you know, what team needs that? I want to add depth up the middle and size up the middle. And if you look around, I mean, in reality, is he going to help the Boston Bruins? Well, they're pretty strong and up the middle, right?
Sure.
So you look at that team, okay, and you have Soderberg and you have Krejci, right? And you have Bergeron. You have Montreal, we have Pekanik, you have Darnay. You know, not the biggest guys, but certainly those guys will compete. Then you got Lars Eller, right? So... and Manny Malhotra, so is there a need there? And when you look at, so that's what I want to say. He's not going to be going to a team that's not in the playoffs, right?
Right.
So when you look at it that way, okay, so Montreal, we say Montreal and Boston are probably not teams he's going to be going to. Tampa Bay, they got some depth up the middle. Guys who play center but can play wing. You have Phil Pulett center, who can play center. You have Stamkos to play center. Tyler Johnson. So there's options there that I don't think they really need. You know, I know Phil Pulett and Johnson are the biggest guys, but do they really need? That's not the way Tampa plays. Tampa's going to play a speed game, right? Which Leguan can play, but I don't think he fits in there. So you look at, in Detroit, he was already there. I don't think that's going to happen again. The Islanders have a bunch of guys who can play center who they're playing at wing. And I don't think that's going to be an option. Pittsburgh, maybe Pittsburgh, but do they? What do they do with Brandon Sutter, and do they want to take on cash? Well, and then Washington. So
Pittsburgh, I thought, would have been an interesting option before they went out and made the Lapierre and Gotch trade earlier this week.
Third liner versus fourth liner, though, Drew. We'll talk about the trade later. I think, you know, if you look at it, maybe Washington wants to add in a guy
Seems like a very Barry Trotz kind of player.
Yeah, he's
obviously, they're familiar with the time in Nashville.
So that would make some sense to me. And then you look in the Western Conference. Chicago doesn't have much room to move there. St. Louis, that's not going to fit. They got a bunch of guys they can put in that role, not him. Nashville has already been there.
Yeah.
Anaheim up the middle. I mean, Kessler, excuse me. I don't know if I see that. They have a bunch of guys I think can add similar attributes to what Leguan brings to the table. And then you look at Vancouver. That's not the direction Vancouver's going.
No, they don't need a veteran guy. I mean,
Jets is not the direction they're going. Calgary, same idea. L.A., I don't see him taking on money past this year. So there you go. I mean, how many options are there? So
there's
maybe Washington looks like the most logical place for him.
Seems, especially with the Barry Trotz ties.
Yeah. I don't mind his game if he's put into a certain situation, in the right situation. But, again, why did Ottawa sign him? That's a whole different story. Like, what were they getting from him for a two-year deal? I mean, maybe, you know, although, I'm not saying this was their plan, but if their plan was to sign him then trade him, then maybe they're getting something for nothing.
Depending on what they trade him for, of course. Matt Bartkowski of the Boston Bruins. Well, a lot of links between him and the Vancouver Canucks as of late.
Well, Jim Benning, former
obviously
Bruins executive, now in Vancouver. Vancouver, you know, Kevin Bieksa is getting older there.
Out for 6 to 8 weeks with a broken hand.
He's out, but I think Bartkowski is more of a long-term kind of move.
Sure.
Bartkowski is going to be a good puck mover, smart player offensively. Gives up a lot of size, cannot defend his own in front of the net and all those things. So Vancouver wants to add some puck movers, a guy like Chris Tanev, solid guy, and Alex Edler has been more, you know, a stalwart guy, not producing as much offense. So he'd be able to key the power play for them, maybe. That's what they see him as, a good puck mover. They can maybe insulate in even strength and penalty kill situations and play more of power play and lower down in the roster. So I can see some links. Vancouver might... You know, are we talking about Zach Cassian and somebody else? Because I don't think Cassian for Bartkowski is a move that Boston would make.
No.
But Boston would want something else, I think. But Boston would seem like a place where Cassian could succeed as a kind of a rugged right winger, and they need some scoring. Now, he's not necessarily that scorer.
But he's got the size that Boston has been linked to for,
You look at some pieces, and certainly Jim Benning going into Vancouver doesn't have many ties to the players there.
Right.
So he's probably more willing to part with them.
Sure. He's got no loyalty, and then Cassian, you know,
and
they continue to wait for Cassian to break out, and he hasn't been able to.
Sure, let's look at Boston for a second, Drew. You look at Boston. Shouldn't they give up Boychuk? And I like Johnny Boychuk. You know, I've been telling you that over the course of years now. But can Boston succeed in the National Hockey League and down the stretch in a long playoff run with both Torrey Krug and Matt Bartkowski in the back end?
Well, they're both very small.
Small offensively gifted defensemen.
Well, same question can be asked about the Jets and Toby Enstrom and Josh Morrissey.
Well, Morrissey's not here in Winnipeg yet, and you'll see. And depends, I think, on the other guys on the left side. Now, Chara's there, so, I mean,
sure.
Chara, of course, but after Chara and all that stuff. So there are questions to be asked, and I think, you know, you have to also take into account the fact there's no Boychuk. So if you have a big guy like that playing with one of those guys,
it's a lot easier to balance it out.
He's a lot more talented than a Kevin Miller or whoever it may be.
Fair. Well, like you said, 31 days until the trade deadline, and we'll keep you abreast of everything that's been rumored and what eventually happens here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's head to break. When we come back, we head out to Calgary. We talk to our good friend, George Johnson, about the Calgary Flames, the Jets' opponent on Monday night. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.